This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous, a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Hi, Shireen.
Hi, Anna. This is what I sound like.
So you don't have a voice.
No.
We'll get into it later.
Yes, but we have an amazing episode today, and I do talk like this in it. I apologize.
Yeah, so we have a great guest, Sina Ghaznavi, who is a podcaster, an actor, director, a comedian, very funny guy. He has an adorable child. There's a second one coming. I don't know why this is now just really about me talking about the child. You'll understand halfway through the episode, but we talk about a lot of great things. So stay tuned.
Yeah.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, Shireen.
Hi, Anna.
Nice to meet you. Just joking.
Nice to meet you, too.
Your voice is gone.
My voice is gone, so I apologize. But you know what? I'm here.
You are here.
I'm sorry, but that's my disclaimer. Usually I have different disclaimers about my cat. No, today's my voice. I sound like this today. That's just how it is. How are you?
I'm good. I don't have... My voice is still here, but I do want to say I do have my fan on because it's like a million degrees where I live right now. So sorry. It's the unfortunate part of podcasting at home. You're going to have to hear a fan maybe in the background. I don't even know. Might be gated out. We'll see. And then there's drilling all of a sudden going on below me. They've been doing work in my apartment all week, but I didn't know they would be drilling at this time. I don't know what they're drilling. It's unclear to me. So sorry about that. If you hear a bunch of weird noise, it's just one of those episodes. It's a mess.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to do? But we have a great guest today. I'm just going to bring them in because, you know, what else do we have to say? I don't know. Do you have anything else to say?
I sound like this. I'm trying to say only what's necessary.
Yeah. You sound in a weird way. Like, I can't even explain it. You sound like you're underwater while I've never heard you sound like this before. I don't really understand what to make of it. But anyway.
Is it as a listener, you're like, please stop talking? Or can I actually have should I continue talking?
It sounds like you're struggling, to be honest. Like it's like taking all your body to respond.
It sounds, okay, listeners, it sounds so much worse than it feels.
Okay.
I want to be here and talk to the guest. I swear.
Okay.
Now we're ready. Let's bring him in.
Okay. We are joined by an actor, a podcaster, a director. They host fraudsters.fm. Is that how they say it? Fraudsters.fm. You guys are like, that's wild. They're on the Last Podcast Network, which is, you know, famously legendary podcast network. And yeah, we are joined. Drum roll, please. I'm too lazy to do a drum roll. But Sina Ghaznavi, hi.
Hey, what's up? It's great to be here. I feel like I should like waterboard myself or something to like get to the challenge level that you guys are at.
This is not usually how it goes.
No, I listen to the episodes. No, I know. It's totally fine. This is, you know, you've just got a little sultry voice this time. It's fine.
Right.
You know?
This is how we go.
It's a vibe.
This is sort of the beginning of the end.
Thank you for being here.
Okay. Can you confirm? It's fraudsters.fm. That's what you guys go by?
Oh, it's just fraudsters.
Oh, so you go by just like .fm as like...
It's just the URL is fraudsters.fm.
Oh, interesting. Because when I Google it, or when I did Google it...
Yeah. You're not Googling it all the time? You're not
I'm always Googling it. But when I did, it came up as fraudsters.fm, and I kept like searching like, no, fraudsters podcast. But my Google kept being like, it's fraudsters.fm. And I was like, why are you trying to force this on me? I don't know why. It was so weird. And I started to get really confused. But then the actual Apple page just says fraudsters. So I was like, but then it's fraudsters. Anyway, like I said, beginning of the end.
Okay. I want to know all about you.
Okay.
And so let's start from the beginning. Can you please tell us where you were born and where you grew up?
Yeah, I was born actually just north of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in Oil City, which is a small, now pretty rough town that got hit with a lot of like opiate addiction later in the 90s. But we lived there for a little bit and then moved to Pittsburgh in kindergarten, where my dad was not an engineer, not a doctor, not a lawyer. Can you guess the fourth occupation that my father?
Professor.
Close. Persian rug salesman.
Oh.
So he had a rug store. And it's funny, I didn't realize how, you know, on the nose that was until much later in like high school. I was like, oh, wow. Like my dad sold rugs. Like, he sold like fancy Persian rugs for a long time. So I grew up in Pittsburgh and my nickname was Persia because I was like the only one, which is interesting living in Los Angeles now where I'm like a dime a dozen. And so that's where I kind of formed my sense of humor, was in Pittsburgh and kind of being other in that way. And it was an interesting experience for sure.
Sorry, you said Oil City before? I'm sorry. I'm still stuck on that.
Yes.
Oil City. Like you could just call a city that?
There was oil there, technically, at one point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pennsylvania, huh?
You're telling me.
Oil City, huh?
Yeah.
I don't know. As born and raised in California, they don't call cities that way. Actually, no, I guess we have Commerce. The city of Commerce.
Well, yeah, you know, it's like the dust settled after the Iranian Revolution, and my parents are like, this isn't working out so well. We need to get out of here. Where could we go? And it was like that moment of coming to America where he spins the globe, and it's like... Oil City,
baby.
Surely this will be a land of prosperity.
And oil.
And oil. So.
Gosh.
That's fascinating. I've never heard of an immigrant family relocating there. Was there like any reason for that city?
Yeah, my dad's brother had a business in Pittsburgh. And so that's where we started there. But, you know, I don't know. I think we would have been fine someplace where more Persians lived. But at the same time, I love who I am now, and I'm a real product of southwestern Pennsylvania, and I'm happy about that, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, I can't regret who I am at this point.
A real product of southwestern Pennsylvania. It's a very fascinating sort of way to describe yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only reference or connection I have to Pittsburgh is that my sister went to med school there.
Yeah.
And so I visited her when she was over there, and it did seem pretty white to me. But, like, I wonder how it was back then for you. Like, was there any other people of color at all?
There were a few. Southeast Asians. There was maybe a handful of black kids in the school. And then there was, like, me. And then there was, like, another kid from Afghanistan, I remember. Or his family's from Afghanistan. And, like, he was, like, very practicing Muslim. And, like, my family wasn't. I mean, I practiced in, like, middle school with my dad. And then I was like, I'm not really into this. But, like, he was the only one that was, like, close enough. Because they speak, like, a dialect of Farsi as well. And I speak Farsi. And so I would try to like connect with him because I didn't really have anyone to connect with that was my age or anything like that. And he was always so upset that I wasn't a good practicing Muslim. So.
Judgy.
So I couldn't win really in Pittsburgh. So I kind of just, you know, assimilated, but I wasn't assimilated, you know, because you know, the nickname and my name's like very funny and weird. And I got misgendered all the time and teachers never knew how to pronounce my first name or my last name. And it's just a wild experience.
And you said that you use comedy to like get through it. Like, how did that start?
Yeah, I think there's a few things, right? Like, you both are first-gen kids, right? Both your parents are immigrants, yeah? So it's like, you got to be hyper-aware when you're out in public because you're probably translating for them at times.
Yeah.
You also got to, like, know what's happening because you have to kind of translate the world for yourself because a lot of the things that are not culturally relevant to them are just going to kind of fly right over their heads, and you have to be aware of those things. And so I was kind of observant as a kid naturally, and then, you know, in Pittsburgh, you just kind of get picked on if you're different or whatever, just like any other school, I think, any other place. And for me, you know, getting thrown in a trash can or two, getting pushed around, I wasn't able to fight back because I was a small kid. So I used my mouth. And, well, that sounded weird. I used my language. I came off awful. God, this is like my third hour of podcasting today. So it's going to be.
That was great. Thank you.
But yeah, I think it's one of those things where I just had to use a sense of humor to kind of break the tension and work my way out of these situations.
Yeah.
I get that.
I think Anna and I can relate to that for sure. Yeah, we had to at least find humor in like the fucked up stuff to like actually get through them, right?
And I think like my dad would tell this story of when they were like smuggling my brother out of Iran through Pakistan and they like stopped to get ice cream.
And I told the ice cream man what we were doing. And he started yelling, Sarbazi, which is like this guy's, you know, he was like trying to call the police basically. And he's like, these guys are.
Yeah, why would he tell him?
Yeah. So my dad's too friendly.
Wait, does that mean police?
Well, it doesn't mean police. It means like he's like trying.
Tomfoolery.
Pull one over. Yeah, he's trying to pull one over on everybody. And my dad was like, oh no. And then we took our banana split and we split. And he tells that story, and he would tell it at dinner parties growing up. And I remember always thinking, I was like, that's actually a wildly dark story. Because the other side of that is you're imprisoned. I'm never born in America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my brother is forced to go into the military, and he would have been timed with the Iran-Iraq War, which would have been a disaster. He could have been killed. And so our whole lives would have been different. But, you know, for them, they were like, that was a close one. It's like, so that was like a big part of like growing up was hearing them joke about these things. And to them, that was normal. And how difficult it is to be in America, raise kids, not know the language, not know the culture, and still hustle and try to make sure that they are successful. Like, just the hardest thing. I have a kid now and I have one on the way any day now. Any second, my wife could go into labor. So it's like,
thrilling.
It's already difficult. I'm like, I can't believe you didn't know really English or American culture when you got here. It's crazy.
That is so fascinating. Okay, so your parents stayed until after the Iranian Revolution and then left?
Oh, yeah. My mom was a geologist, and she worked for like a Russian industrial company in Iran. And so she spoke a little Russian. She was like a boss, you know, and then, you know, met like a huge group of men worked for her, basically. My dad was a chemist at the same company. That's how they met. And after the revolution, they were like, okay, you can keep your job, but you have to wear this
hijab,
and no men have to take orders from you. And you can't be in alone with any men in this office. And then she was like, still like, all right, I'm a badass. I'm going to do this. She would wear the hard hat over the hijab and still go into like the mines and stuff and do her job. But then as my brother was coming of age and then like the mandatory conscription in the military in Iran, it's like, you know, there's a fanatical government that's in place now. So not the best option for them. And so my uncle was already in America. So they're like, we're getting the hell out of here. So that was like 82.
Wow.
How old is your brother?
He's 8 years older than me. He was like in first grade when they got here to America. Yeah.
So they had to escape, basically.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
But it's like, escape, you just drive to Pakistan and take a flight. It's not like...
I don't know.
It's not like... they just... There's no... There's no, like...
We had Neda Semnani Toluian, who wrote the book, they said they wanted a revolution. And, well, I guess because her parents were part of the revolution, and then they tried to unrevolution.
Yeah.
And that was the whole thing. So they really had to escape because her dad got disappeared. So, like, they had to be, like, they were on, like, camels, you know? You're like, oh, boy.
Yeah, that's a definite move. My parents were in the them streets, but they were, like, not, you know, known figures in the revolution.
Yeah,
or
that's smart.
In the counter-revolution or the counter-protests that happened.
Good,
so.
Good. Yeah, that's interesting.
I'm curious if you know why your uncle went to Oil City.
Well, he was in Pittsburgh. He, like, went to
Pittsburgh.
America.
Pittsburgh.
Yeah, he went to America much earlier. I think went to WVU and got, like, a business degree and kind of, like, started doing that kind of thing. And so, yeah. I still don't know why he settled for, like, Pittsburgh. I guess it was just all kind of money and business and stuff like that. But, you know. God, it's so wild living in Los Angeles. I've only been here for a couple years. It's so wild. So many Persians here. Like, it just boggles my mind. I try to speak Farsi to everyone, and they want nothing to do with me. And, like, like, I'm just, like, such an eager guy. I'm like, oh, salam, how shuma chitore? And they're just like, nah, man, it's cool. And I'm like, what? Why don't you? I don't get to speak, you know? It's like, so, you know, that's the thing. It's beautiful out here, though.
Yeah, I don't know. L.A. Persians are, like, another breed of odd.
That's what my mom said.
Odd, you know, like, they're, I can't. I'm a Northern California Persian, so, like, I'm definitely sometimes have culture shock by the way that Persians act here.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a wine country Persian, so I don't get it, okay? But, yeah, so your parents come to America. They're like, this place sucks. It's time to move on. And then did your mom continue to geologize?
No, like a lot of immigrants here, they came and just completely overhauled their careers.
Yeah.
My dad obviously went into the Persian rug business. My mom became an interior designer and taught Persian on the side.
That's great.
Yeah, now she's actually a teacher of the Persian language at the University of Pittsburgh. So she teaches like five different levels.
Okay, mom.
Yeah, she's
That's
like
awesome.
In her 70s now. It's like the happiest part of her life right now is, you know, teaching these kids and inspiring the youth and talking about politics in the classroom, which I've told her, please do not do. This is not the environment for you to share your very charged political opinions to these young people.
That's most Iranians in America, unless they want to go back, then they're like low key about it. But even like I was in a taxi in Germany and I met an Iranian guy and the taxi driver, and he just started. I was like going to the airport. I was like not in the mood. It was 6 a.m. and he just started going off. And I'm like, yeah, of course. Sure. But it is 6 a.m. So like,
yeah.
I don't know if I need to really. I mean, I just assume you live in Germany. I assume you're not a fan. Like, it's like, yeah, we know.
It is, but it's all encompassing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my mom and I would, early on, we would have these debates and these arguments about, you know, what, especially during Obama's time, because he was big into the drone strikes and stuff like that. And she really wanted a drone strike on Iran. And I was like, Mom, that would be war. That would be war. And she's like, we have to get them out. And I'm like, Jesus, okay.
My mom was the same, though, with Syria.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. It's like there's several different camps. And I think that's like a one thing I'd love to hear more about from you guys. And our diaspora is so fractured, right?
Mm-hmm.
But one of the questions I asked my mom when we were driving, you know, those going to the airport conversations with your parents or whatever, you're going back to college. My dad's in the back. He has Parkinson's, so he doesn't talk very much. And he's just like nodding along. And I'm like, Mom, what if Obama could do a surgical drone strike on the Iranian government and wipe out all the mullahs, ayatollahs, everybody, except there's one collateral damage, your own mother. And without missing
Jesus
a beat,
Christ.
Without missing a beat, my mother's like, everything takes sacrifice.
Oh, my God. Also, what a crazy thing to ask your mom.
I know. That's my mom and I.
To respond in a very normal way, too.
Oh, yeah.
It's like she's thought about it.
She's like, no, absolutely not. You know, she's always said, like, don't drop me, you know, don't put me in one of those homes. I was like, I'm not going to put you in one of those homes. I'm dropping you in Iran with one handgun, and you got to shoot your way out.
And so, she's going to kill everybody.
Yeah.
I actually recently threatened to put my dad in a home, and he was so, he literally was, like, so offended.
Yeah.
That, like, it's because he had said some shit to me that really pissed me off.
Of course.
And so I was like, fucking watch it. Like, it's, you know, you're really edging to the point where the power has changed hands, you know? Like, yeah. Guess what? I got a salary. I make money. I can afford shit. Don't fuck with me at this point.
Yeah.
And I saw the fear in his eyes. And then I saw him again later. This was like a month or two later. And he was like on sort of a PR tour where he was trying to crisis control what he had said. And he was just like, I think it's because you do not understand my accent. You got confused. And I was like, bitch, there is one person whose accent I know like the back of my hand. And it's my Persian father's. Okay. It's not like you think I missed something growing up. No, you've been yelling at me for 33 years. I don't misunderstand your accent. Ever, but I just thought it was funny that like the whole I'll put your ass in a home like really fucked with him. Anyway, it's a good threat. So I just really recommend that to everyone. That is Anna's recommendation corner when you really want to put your parents in their place.
Fuck around and find out, Bubba.
Mm-hmm.
On that note, let's take our first break. We'll be right back.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hey, we're back. I relate to your dad, or my dad also had to give up his job. He was a civil engineer in Syria, and he came here and he started working like eventually in retail. How did your dad adapt to like a much different job and lifestyle and all of that? How did he go about like reinventing that?
It's wild. I think he just pulled from what he knew. My dad's from Kashan, which if you know, it's like they got the dope rugs in Kashan. And so he knew rugs at an early age and it was a thing that they knew. I mean, he grew up a farmer. Like they were like legit farm type shit, you know? It's like, oh my God. And so he knew rugs and that was a thing that he did. And he's naturally like a sales kind of guy. And it's one of those things where now that you ask it, I don't think I ever asked a specific question of how did this go? Like, what was that experience like? I do know that they are, both of my parents, constant hustlers, both entrepreneurs in their own right. Like, they made their own businesses, and I have my own business. My brother runs his own practice right now. Like, we all, I mean, that's where like we got it from. And I think there's a lot of the immigrant experience that drives you to that. You have, you come from a completely insecure place, a place where you are just, your amygdala is firing all day. And then you come to America, you're like, I gotta make it good for these kids. And that's all encompassing. And I would say to a fault to a certain degree, right? Because then it's like you lose your sense of self because you're so focused on making this life for your children. It's an admirable and valiant path, but it is a difficult and arduous one as well.
Yeah. The thing is with that, though, they really find a way to use it against you sometimes.
Of course.
That's as if it was your choice.
Yeah.
I sacrifice everything. In Iran, we had servants. I was very rich.
It's like, yeah, servants. Yeah, you just put the Kurds to work. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, great.
Jesus Christ.
What the fuck? It's tough, man.
You just tortured the poor Kurdish people. Like, great.
Yeah.
It's fucked up.
I'm going to ask another question.
Yes.
So you're in high school. Let's go to that time. Mm-hmm. In your mind, like, what are you interested in? Do you have an idea of what you want to do, if you want to go to college or not? Or, like, what's that like?
I think my brother was 8 years older than me, so in fourth grade, he went to college. And so...
Oh. I thought you were saying when he was in fourth grade, he went to college.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
whoa!
Sorry, that didn't come out that way.
Holy shit!
Very smart! 1600 SAT! Very smart! Yeah.
Sorry, go on. No,
Yeah, so I thought I, like, you know, in my head, I was like, I'm going to go be a good boy, good Persian boy, and go to, like, you know, a state school and do whatever. And then around, like, junior year, I started getting really into comedy. And I just started getting interested, like, really intensely into it, to the point where we'd be on vacation and I'd be listening to, like, Mel Brooks, like, 10,000-Year-Old Man, and just watching comedy movies. I had the list of the AFI's most funniest movies of all time, the American Film Institute, not America's Funniest Home Videos. But I used to, like, go through all those things. So I was, you know, one of those things in my senior year was, like, putting on Thursday Night Live, which is like a play on Saturday Night Live, and tried to get a local celebrity. I was, like, producing and doing events, and, like, I was already doing what I wanted to be doing. And I remember even watching Ted Alexandro. I don't know if you know that comedian, but I watched his comedy special and I was like, I love comedy, and George Carlin and all these guys and Richard Pryor. And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna do comedy. And I think that same sentiment of, like, I'm gonna come to America and we're gonna just make this life work that my parents had, I just adopted that. And I just said, I'm just gonna go into comedy. Cut to now, when I'm just getting over my $300,000 of law school debt, it's like a very different path at the same time.
Wait, okay, we're going to have to get to that.
Yeah.
So what did you do after high school?
So I had applied. I was a tennis player, and so I had applied to school so I could play college tennis. And then I remember playing this, like, one tournament where I just got routed, and I just, like, just dunked on, and it's like two losses, and I was out, and I was like, this isn't for me. Everyone's so serious. No one's making jokes. I don't think anyone's having a good time. And I went and ripped up all the applications. I pulled applications out of the schools that I was applying to, and I reapplied to schools in, like, places that had good comedy groups, basically, and places that had good comedy scenes. And so I settled on going to GW in D.C. because they had a great comedy group called Recess there that I really liked. And so, yeah, that was like my mission from 18. I did my first stand-up then in D.C.
Wow.
Yeah.
Were your parents, like, were you open with your parents about this? Or was it more like for, like, a solo thing?
For so long, I think my parents still think, they just were like, what is this guy doing? Like, I don't understand.
Right.
How you, like, this isn't real. This is just a thing. This is a phase. He'll get over it.
Sorry, I want to go back. Let's talk about tennis. So it took you that long to realize how unwell tennis is?
I started in kindergarten.
Right. But, like, because I play tennis, and let me tell you, I would never continue as, like, a professional level. That shit was, people are cray-cray.
Here's the thing. They're crazy. But listen, it was a stage for me. Every true. I didn't win a lot, but I would come off stage and people would tell my dad, "We love watching your son. Your son is so entertaining." And I'd be doing like dance moves when I hit a winner. You know what I mean? I loved it. I'd talk shit to the bigger the guy, the more I would talk shit to them.
Right.
And I made it really fun for myself. I had a good time for it. But then that last tournament, I just remember looking over and it was like what was it, the Rocky with the tall Russian dude? And he's just like, it felt like that, where like the kid was so serious, jumping rope. Then his father was like whispering in his ear to like visualize winning. And my dad wasn't there. It was just me by myself. I drove myself there. I was making jokes with friends. And then I lost. And I was like, man, college is only going to get more serious. It's only going to be more guys. Like, I don't even want to hang out with these people. So.
Yeah. No, I get that. Yeah, no, I could never.
Ugh.
Even just like recently watching the new Netflix show Breakpoint, I'm like, these people are all unwell. Like, there is a clip where like the world number one woman player, Iga Swiatek, is talking to her sports psychologist, and the woman is being like, "You must let go of emotion." Like, it's all this stuff where you're like, "What the fuck, dude?" All they train you to do is be emotionless, feelingless. Just like, you can't even, like, it's like, you know, the horses that have blinders. It's like they put like these blinders on these children from literally like 3 years old, and so they don't see. They have no peripheral vision, because if you even see anything in your peripherals, your whole game is ruined. And like, that's. Absolutely. Just the fact that we continue also to go to these, be like, well, yeah, fuck yeah, and like keep supporting these people when you're like, they're kids in cages. Like, they're kids in mental cages so they can perform at such an elite level. Anyway, tennis is sick.
To be good when you were young, when you had to be homeschooled.
Yeah.
Any of the really good players had to be home. I remember one kid, he was out of Philadelphia. We were playing a tournament and he finished his match and he just waved his mother down. And she came down to the court, picked up his bag, and walked off court with him.
Yeah, she probably put him in a cage somewhere. So there couldn't be a risk of him seeing something that could like cause emotion.
Yeah. It's wild. So
it's so wild. These people are all unwell. And then everyone's like, God, Nick Kyrgios is so emotional. And it's like, that's a good thing. It's a good thing that he can feel and still compete at that level.
He's honest. Yeah. I love him.
Versus like the other guys who are like, I shall compete and nothing else. And you're like, oh, God, you're all sick.
Yeah.
Anyway, we can move on from tennis. I just wanted to have
No, I mean, it does sound like it gave you an opportunity to like perform.
Yeah.
And maybe like get rid of any nerves that you would have as a performer. Is that true?
Yeah, for sure. I don't know if you guys do the Enneagram. I love an Enneagram, but I'm like a 7 on the Enneagram, which is just like the, you know, extrovert, the adventurer or whatever. And there's like a sub one called the entertainer. And it's just, I am just that. I love to entertain. I love to get out in front of a crowd and just have a good time, or not even like on a stage, like dinner parties, whatever. Like,
yeah.
I just, you know, cashier line at the grocery store, you know? I love You're to make the person. I want to make a laugh, you know? It's like, let's have a moment.
How was starting comedy for you then when you were 18 and then in college?
It was rough. Just like anyone doing comedy early on, my first stand-up show was at Chief Ike's Mambo Room in Adams Morgan, and the guy brought me up as Cena Gaza Gaza, who gives a fuck? And after that summer, I did an all-black comedy tour in Pittsburgh because this guy that saw me perform wanted to manage me. His name was Big Mike. I didn't know his last name. I was just calling him Big Mike. Mm-hmm. And I toured with a guy and a couple other comics called High Octane. One guy was Frog. There was a guy called Jerry Wilson. And they were like, you need a stage name. How about Cena Cash? Or like Cena something. I'm like, oh, God, I don't know. And so I talked to my parents about it. My dad was like, what about Cena John? And so begin crisis of identity for like the next 15 years of my life, maybe longer, really. And I went by Cena John because I knew the Persians would understand it. Americans, whatever. I mean, they can say it. But it really created this weird thing in me where I felt like, now looking back, it really was just me kind of whitewashing myself.
Yeah.
And trying to assimilate too much. And that was just, it was cool to be different, I felt, but then it was like, I didn't want to be too different. And so I just didn't have the confidence to really understand what was happening to me at that time and to have someone be like, no, just embrace it, my man.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
When did that happen when you wanted to, like, embrace it?
Honestly, Trump, 2016. It took Trump getting into office, and I was like, oh, like, this isn't right. I don't need to make life easier for anyone in that way, you know? No is a complete sentence. You know, I don't need this to be the way I am. I can embrace everything about my history and my last name and where we come from and make people say it. I mean, I remember I met Harry Kondabolu back in the day and I was like, damn, that's fucking dope. You just get people to say your last name. That's awesome. And I just didn't have it in me. Whether it was like lack of mentorship or just like I watched the wrong TV shows, I don't know. But it happened. But I'm happy with where I'm at now. And, you know, growth is growth, however way you look at it.
Growth is growth.
Yeah, you want to be like just the perfect. It's a funny thing. You have to be like the perfect level of different. We have to be like quirky different, but you don't want to be like school shooter different.
Yeah,
you know? Exactly. You want to be like just the right amount of different, because it's. Like, even after Trump and people have become sort of more progressive just because they were now dealing with such extremes, there is still a way of people, like, othering you, you know? It feels never-ending where you're like, man. But, like, being Persian is cool.
Yeah. And it was like, Persian or Iranian or, well, you know, whatever, however way we want to describe it, that's a whole thing. And then, you know, I think just being a person of color is, like, this generic kind of thing, but then I run into circles where it's like white people other me, but black people will also other me, and they're like, you know, they're like, you're not black. I was like, I didn't say I was black. And then I'm like, yeah. But I was like, don't call me white though. I'm not white. I'm
right.
It's like,
yeah. But then brown people will also other you. It's like,
oh,
a weird thing.
I'm not brown enough. And other Iranians that are darker skinned will be like, nah, man, you don't really have it that bad. I'm like, why is this a contest? Why? How did we get here?
There's colorism everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
And like, you know, casting, even in casting, there was like, we want Middle Eastern actors. And then they're like, they see me, they're like, he's not really the Middle Eastern we're looking for. And it's like,
he's not wearing a turban.
It's like, you know,
yeah.
Can you do an impression of Kumail for this audition, please? You know, it's like, come on, give me a break.
You just take your shirt off. You have like a gorgeous six pack.
Yeah.
Sorry, but this is the real Kumail, okay? Yeah. Just buff now, baby. They're like, that's actually what we're looking for. We're not looking for brown. We're just looking for buff.
God. They're never looking for hairy. That's for sure. They're
never. No. Unless they want to do like a funny waxing scene.
Yes.
But even then.
And I've been in one of those.
They could put that all on you.
Of course you have.
Which one were you in?
It was just like a sketch video. It was like an all-female sketch group back in the day in New York. And they were like, Sina, would you get your chest waxed for us? Not your whole chest, just like part of it. And I was like, hell yeah, that sounds great. That sounds so funny. I'll do anything for comedy.
Yeah.
And then, then my nipple was bleeding. And that was fucking crazy.
Were you waxed by a professional or just like?
No, I was waxed by a sketch comedian.
Yeah. Oh, boy. They waxed that nipple off, is what you're saying.
They did. Oh, this poor, but the hair is growing back.
Okay. Oh, good. Wait, so when did you, after college, did you end up moving to New York to continue comedy?
So I went from D.C. I did Improv Olympic in Chicago for a summer, and then I went to UCLA for a semester, and I did the Comedy Store there for a semester. It was like my study abroad. And then as a junior, I came to Fordham in the Bronx, and I lived in New York for like the next 17, 18 years until we moved here.
Oh, so you just went to a different place every year for school.
Yeah, pretty much. I still graduated in 4 years, which is very strange.
That's the hustle culture.
That's the hustle.
Yeah.
Did you have any friends by the end?
Yeah, you know, it's like, I think I have friends still from all of those different places.
Right.
So, but I think in general, it's tough to have those deeper friendships, I think, in general.
Right.
But yeah.
Because you guys didn't spend 4 years in the trenches.
Yeah, man.
No, but that's cool. I'm glad you got to go to do all those different things. I feel like I wish I had taken advantage of more stuff in college, but I was just like weed, man. Oh,
yeah.
If I was less into weed, guys, I would be a rocket scientist by now.
I was very into Wii, especially at New York. Good Lord. I mean, I was selling it. It was incredible.
Selling Bammer. Sorry, I don't know why I'm attacking you. My immediate instinct as a Californian is to attack someone who says they're selling weed in any other place. I'm a cruel Californian sicko when it comes to weed.
Hell yeah. I support it.
Actually, this is something very interesting. You know how, like, in America, like, when you eat, like, edibles, like, now, like, the gummies, they're all, like, 10 milligrams or, like, 5 milligrams. In Germany or, like, in Berlin, I was just there, I was talking to this weed guy, and they're one gummy is 25 milligrams.
That's insane.
I was like, are y'all
no,
trying
it's
to
not.
Die?
That's, no. That's so aggressive.
It's, there's no way.
I have a bag of them. I'm like, yeah, thank you. Like, sir.
It's too much.
How are you going to eat a 25 milligram gummy and then what?
Socialized medicine. That's how.
It's like a shaman dose of weed.
Yeah, what you do, it's like, what am I, like a depressed housewife? Like, I wouldn't be able to do anything. I would just be able to be like, sorry, mommy has to go to bed. Like, what is the point? Anyway, sorry, I just wanted to share that.
No, that's fascinating.
They're all going to die there when weed is legalized. I just want you guys to know, like.
I mean, that's a big jump, I feel like. Okay, before I forget, let's take our second break. BRB.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
And we're back. What were we talking about before? Weed?
We were talking about how you went to New York.
Yeah, you went to New York.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, so your parents were like, the fuck? Did they ever come around to the idea of you being an entertainer or doing comedy?
So my mom would refer to me as a clown of like what she viewed comedy as. She's like, he's the clown. And that was, you know, pretty rough and hurtful for many years. a lot of Freudian analysis that I had to do to get through a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't until now where I have a production company, I have good corporate clients and brands and stuff like that. I'm going to go on paternity leave and I'm still going to make money. And now just this last Thanksgiving or two Thanksgivings ago, she was just talking to my brother or something. She's like, yes, my son isn't, you know, he's an entertainer. And my brother looked at me and he's like, I was like, whoa, Jesus, this is huge. This is a big, big fucking moment here.
From clown to entertainer.
Huge, huge. Just below the garbage man in Iran is the entertainer. And it's like, here, garbage men are fucking great pensions, you know? So, but yeah, that is tough. My dad was always trying to be supportive, but they weren't really crazy about it. They still think it's like a hobby and not just.
Do they ever go to shows?
Yeah, they laugh. They go to the shows. Like, I grew up, my dad loved BET comedy nights. He loved watching that. And like, we would watch comedy together. He loved to laugh. He was a very funny guy. And so, they would come to the shows. They would be supportive. But at the same time, they're like, yeah, but this isn't going to be your life though.
Right.
And so after college, I would get phone call after phone call. My mom is crying. I'd get like a long worded letter, handwritten letter from my father about my life unraveling and how this was a terrible path that I was on.
Crying.
Yeah.
Is that how law school came into picture?
That is how, and I was like, this is the distorted reality I had. They were like, you have to go to graduate school of some kind. And I was like, all right, fine. I'm not going to business school. That's stupid. I'm going to go to law school part-time at night. And they're like, well, okay, whatever. And I was like, yeah, okay, yes. I'll show you. And then I was like, what? What was I thinking? Why did I say any of these things? And I mean, I was working at TechServe. I don't know if you guys know TechServe, but it's like this like little computer repair shop. It's like a iconic place in Manhattan. But I was like happy working there, doing stand-up, doing improv, doing sketch, like just getting up and doing things, And I didn't need a lot, and I was happy, but it's just, again, it goes back to that I wish I had a little bit more confidence in myself, and I'm a risk-taker but I wish things would have netted out a little differently. And then I ended up going to law school, producing, like as an agency producer during the day, and then going to school at night, and that was very intense. I ended up spiraling a little bit and getting depressed, anxious.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Loving drugs. Yeah, loving every sort of it. And then pass the bar exam, which was insane.
Well,
turns out you're the smart one.
Yes.
Not your brother who went to college in fourth grade.
Yeah.
Because passing the bar is not easy.
I know. I mean, it didn't help.
Kim Kardashian failed the first time.
Yeah. He could have at least. I mean, he's a plastic surgeon.
Is he really?
He's got his own practice.
I was going to ask. You said he has.
So annoying. Yeah, yeah.
You want to be an L.A. Persian?
Yeah. I mean, he's like, I asked him, I was like, why don't you make a practice out here? He's like, do you realize how many Persian plastic surgeons there are in Los Angeles? I was like, oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
But how many good Persian plastic surgeons are there,
I mean.
All the noses look the same, I swear.
I know.
They do good work on those noses, though.
That I was going to ask you. They do. They do.
Because that is kind of, I feel like 99.8% of the income comes from like Persians being like, I need a new nose.
Yeah.
And cash. Can I pay cash?
Yeah. Which is like, stop getting your noses redone unless you have like a medical. I just can't with these noses, man.
We have royal noses. Oh, this is a king's nose I have.
Yeah.
Dude, I have a cousin who got her her nose redone. I swear to God, I cannot remember what she looked like before.
Yeah.
Sometimes I forget she got her nose redone because I'm like, I don't remember you as a human being. Like, what if people don't remember you? I don't know. Anyway.
I mean, I didn't grow up in L.A., but I grew up in SoCal. And my mom's, like, group of friends, a good portion of them, like, would give their daughters nose jobs as, like, a graduation gift from high school. Like, that was just like a thing to do. So, but I was going to ask you about your brother because you said he has some practice. Because my sister, who's older than me, is also a doctor. And I do this. And so I'm sure there was something there,
Yeah, I mean, I always wanted to do this. My brother always wanted to be a doctor. And
same.
Yeah, he like always wanted to do this. And he's doing it now. And he had to work really, really hard. I mean, we lived together in Brooklyn for a while. And he had to work these like crazy 30-hour shifts. And he'd come home and I'd be, like burning that sweet leaf. And he'd walk in after a 30-hour shift like, sweet, good Lord, what am I doing? And I, now he runs his own practice, and it's tough. He's like a new small business owner because he was in a lot of medical practices or a lot of hospitals before working, and that's like a nice infrastructure. But he's in that hustle now, and he loves it. And he's like, he gets the freedom of like living his life. So we're really proud of him.
That's awesome.
Good for him. Wait, where is he based out of?
He's in Virginia.
I thought you were going to say Oil City.
Oil City. AMG Plastic Surgery. Come on down.
Has he ever been like, Cena, come on. Come on. You should come for a consultation.
Yeah. No, he did. I did because I couldn't breathe out of one nostril. So I went in for like the just clear it out.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
My brother was like, grabbed my face.
Yeah.
Did the thing that doctors do when they like hold your face in that way. And he's like, you know, you could get rid of the hump. You could do the straightening out. It's like, no.
Oh, wow.
I'm not doing any of that. I would like to sleep normally. Mm. That's all I want.
Mm-mm-mm.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. I never.
That's wild. To be called a freak by your own brother. Just joking. Can you imagine?
But it's so normal to talk about that stuff. Very in Eastern culture.
Oh, yeah. My cousins go like, you are so lucky you don't need a nose job. I'm like, you literally didn't need a nose job. You did not need a nose job. You chose to get a nose job.
Yeah.
But I do remember when I was really young, my dad goes, hey, if you ever need a nose job, just let me know. Like, that was like an offer on the table. I couldn't have a Nintendo. Like, I couldn't have like anything. God forbid I asked for a Barbie. Current, that's very topical. But like,
very topical.
A nose job? You know insurance doesn't cover a nose job, but
it's
like...
It's good for business. Yeah. If you want a job interview, okay, you have big nose, difficult, okay? Yeah.
I mean, it's a whole nother level of assimilation, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's wild.
Yeah. But I mean, I also understand, like, if you get bullied for a feature, I understand...
Sure.
As a kid, like, my little sister got bullied for, like, her big nose, and she ended up getting a nose job, and her personality changed completely. Like, she's just confident and stuff. So I do think there's a time and place for it. But it is strange to, like, especially being in L.A. and, like, seeing, I don't know, it's so rare to find someone that doesn't have a nose job. And that's just, like, strange to me. But no, I know what it's like to have a doctor sibling and also do this. So I just want you to know that I relate.
I feel so seen.
To your parents, like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah. And, like, I keep telling them, I'm like, I started my own business. And they were like, so? I was like, you did this. You started, like, you told me to do stuff, but then you actually started businesses yourself. Your children are just going to replicate what they see you doing, not what you tell them to do.
Yeah.
And it's a great lesson for me as just, like, a new father to know that, like, my kid's just going to, he's just going to do what I do or what my wife does, right? And that's all they're going to remember. And that experience, that feeling that they have growing up is what they're going to carry with them, not these weird old-timey lessons.
Yeah. Mm. The sister that I'm talking about just had a baby. He's 4 months. And I've never been around a baby like this, like, consistently.
Mm.
And we've been, like, talking about, like, how we're going to raise him and, like, making sure we talk Arabic to him and all these things. And it's hard not to think about, I don't know, like, I feel like a lot of things fucked me up growing up. And I'm sure you feel the same way. It's just hard to be... I don't know. I commend you for being a parent, I guess. I don't plan on doing it myself, but, like, seeing my sister on this journey, I have so much more respect for, like, anyone that chooses to have a kid. It is so much work.
Well, I'm telling you, these evangelical Christians are cranking out a dozen kids a pop, okay? And so we got to fight back, and we got to
build
strengthen numbers. We got to build a small little army, okay?
Do you speak Farsi to your child, the one that's currently already in existence?
I try to say some words like hiar so that he gets a little of the sound. Hiar. Hiar Haley Dustari. And so I'm like.
Does he?
And he loves cucumbers. Oh. Yeah. And so I try to do that. But my wife's Japanese and her mom was living with us for a while.
A Japanese Persian baby? Can you send pics?
Polyglot. He's going to be a polyglot.
Yeah.
I need to see what this baby looks like.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, he's.
Oh my God.
He is adorable.
He's gorgeous, right? You know, I always thought. Now, sorry, I'm about to become sort of like a weird imperialist, but I always thought sort of like because Iran is in Asia. And, like, I have family members who look somewhat more Asian, and I don't know if it's just, like, the influence of the region, but, like, Iranians do sometimes, like, facially look more, like, traditionally Asian in the sense of, like, Chinese, like, how people would look. Like, it's a very interesting mix depending on the region.
You know where that's from.
Where, what is it from?
Genghis Khan.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's
exactly. Mongolia.
Yeah.
My mom would always be like, you know your ancestors are the Huns. And I'm like, so we're bad?
So fucked up. He came in and murdered people and stacked decapitated heads into pyramids.
It's gorgeous.
This man, and now we're gorgeous. 80%. Now we're very beautiful. And so this is my...
Oh my gosh.
He's beautiful.
He's so cute.
Are you fucking for real? How the fuck did you do that? Are you serious?
Guys.
Oh my God. I have to text Miles.
Oh my God. Miles is also a very cute kid.
Yeah, I did the Daily Zeitgeist this week. He's got an adorable baby. Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah,
Oh my God.
Well, he has my hair, which is like
I
all
know.
I want.
He has like a Persian man's head of hair. And
yeah,
then a
and he came out like that.
Face.
Yeah, he's so beautiful. But I'm like bathing him, and this kid is the hairiest Japanese Persian kid. His back is hairy. It's legit.
Gorgeous.
And I tell him every time, I'm like, buddy, it's a blessing and a curse what I've given you. Okay, so you're just going to have to deal with this.
Oh, is your next one a boy or a girl?
A boy.
Nice. Two supermodels in the family? Are you goddamn kidding me? Oh, my God.
Yeah. He's very charming. Loves bits.
Cena,
loves to like do bits.
You've
yeah,
hit the you've hit the like the bloodline goddamn jackpot. I can't guys, I can't even explain what Cena just showed us. Like imagine a gorgeous baby boy.
A chair.
Just a Persian Japanese wonder. I'm sorry I'm losing it, but I just think that's such a beautiful mix of cultures.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then you just have like a full head of Persian hair.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Oh.
Like all the Japanese relatives are like, his eyes are so big. His hair, yeah. Look at all the hair. They're all losing it. Like when I went to Japan to meet Cosmo's family, my wife's name is Cosmo, meet Cosmo's family.
Wait,
like,
I was at your baby shower.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you were.
Anna, what the fuck?
Wait, because I'm
right.
Good friends with Nick Turner and Lyra.
Yes.
Oh, my God. It's all coming to me. I saw you do all that weird baby shit that they made
yeah,
you guys do.
Yeah, that's right. The obstacle
yeah.
course. That's right.
The baby shit. I don't remember any. I was just like, Jesus Christ. These are goddamn adults. Oh, my God. Wow. The name Cosmo just brought it all back to me.
Yeah.
Because I remember being like, Cosmo, what a cool name.
It is a very cool name.
And then looking at Nick and Lyra being like, okay.
All right,
Otis.
Me too.
Okay. No, but this is so, wow.
And our boy's name is Hiroki, and we call him Hiro.
I was going to ask about the name, because
yeah.
For us, we wanted to have a name that would work in Arabic and English, but now yes. You have Japanese in the picture in Farsi.
Yeah.
How did you decide on a name?
So... No middle name, because Cosmo and I don't have middle names.
Yeah, it's not very common.
Yeah.
And like, so, I don't know why.
So then Ghaznavi is like the last name, so they're going to take Ghaznavi, and then...
They're going to take?
Yeah.
I would hope.
I was like, they should do the last name, but like, let's give them like a real Japanese name,
yeah.
So that people read this name, they're like, what the fuck? And so that's where we ended up, and so...
That's cute.
Yeah, and... I don't know. I was just going to say, like, when we were in Japan, it was wild because, like, they were enamored with my curly hair. And they were, like, their relatives were, like, putting their hands in my hair. And I was like, oh, I see now. I finally have experienced what so many black people have experienced in America, where it's just, like, the immediate hand in your hair. You're like, whoa, whoa, whoa,
yeah.
What's happening here? Also, these curls are hydrated. Back off.
About to get oily, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he has like such a good sort of wave to his hair, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Beautiful baby.
Beautiful baby. Good job. Good job.
Thank you.
Yeah, now you're about to have a second one. The nerve.
Yeah.
They're going to be so cute. Little brothers.
Little brothers. I'm very excited.
Little Persian Japanese brothers. I mean, I can't even. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And brand them early. Get them an Instagram handle. You know what I mean? Get ahead
of
it.
Yeah.
Persian Japanese bros.
Yeah.
I mean, in this economy, they got to start creating content.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Now.
I mean, you're creating content. You lost your voice. You're like, the show must go on.
Hustle.
I got to be here.
Yeah. Have you considered sort of like starting to do like content where you're like, have you ever wanted gorgeous children? With a few easy steps, your children could be as gorgeous as mine. And then sort of like that energy. But then it's a very specific sort of thing where you have to be Persian and Japanese. But, yeah, you know.
Yeah, I don't... I don't do the whole thing where I blur my kid's face out on social. I don't do that. I think that's just too much effort.
Oh my God, what am I doing? I need to go follow you. Oh my God, I didn't even know there was a goddamn gorgeous child to be followed. That sounds creepy, but...
we'll put some pictures up of him, and I don't mind. It's like, we're already... They already know.
Yeah. They already know. They're like, Dad, am I on Instagram?
The Zuck already knows everything that's happening.
That's awesome. Wow. I'm very happy for you, and I'm happy you're in L.A.
Yes.
Because it's, I don't know, Persians everywhere.
Yeah.
We're at the end of the podcast, but where can people find, we didn't even talk about, no, before we do that, can you tell us about your podcast?
Goddamn baby.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, this fucking, sorry, I'm on your Instagram now.
Fraudsters is on the Last Podcast Network. True crime comedy. We're kind of following in the footsteps of Last Podcast on the Left. Basically, our ethos is if you're a scammer that has taken advantage of vulnerable people financially, we're going to cover you. There's a certain level of absurdity and reality distortion field and like the abuse of trust that is insane for me. And it really gets me more upset than anything because there are so many legal ways to scam people. And so we even just mainly focus on all the illegal things that people do. We also do stuff on like affinity fraud, which is like race hustling, like the Sean Kings of the world,
right?
that kind of Sean stuff. Kings. So, yeah, exactly.
Wait, how did you decide that topic for a podcast?
The scammers, like the fraud in general.
Just like, yeah, like as a comedian, performer, director, person, what attracted you to that?
Yeah, so it's a wild story. I was trying to develop a documentary about this guy in 1999. That convinced the head of a car dealership company that he had the cure for AIDS. And it was this crazy thing. And the CEO of this company created a sub-company that was a pharmaceutical thing, put out a press release, again, 1999, put out a press release that said, we have the cure for AIDS. And the stock price spiked 1,200% overnight. And everyone went crazy. Turns out this guy who said that he had the cure was a former felon, was a carny, and just convinced this guy through fake documents and all these kinds of things that he had this cure. And I wanted to do a doc on it, and I talked to Henry from Last Podcast. He's my boy. We've been friends forever. And he's like, why don't you just do this?
Z-Bro?
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know why I said that. I don't really know him like that. But
but he was like, you should do this as a show. And so that was kind of, I was like, oh, yeah. And so then it was like, you just see how many scams there are and how many fraudsters there are. And people always ask me, like, are you ever going to run out? I'm like, all right, what? Run out? There is never going to be an end. There is so much. Like,
yeah, humans suck.
Yeah, it's constant. It's really shocking how many people are so brazenly taking advantage of vulnerable people. We just did a recording on Jen Shah today from The Real Housewives, who was scamming elderly people.
Legend.
And I never watched the show. And here I'm like, watch this. I'm like, this is the crate. She was already getting sued by the government.
Yeah, she kept going.
And she was like, let me go on national fucking television.
And she also knew she was being investigated and tried to, like, move a bunch of shit to, like, Kosovo or some shit. It's like, girl,
yes.
The jig is up.
She moved the company headquarters, yeah, to Kosovo.
The jig is up.
Like, what the fuck? These people.
And then the craziest part, all her fucking, like, shit turned out, all her, like, designer stuff turned out to be fake.
Oh, counterfeit. Yeah, we went through the list today, actually, too. It was very funny.
It's pretty funny, though. That's actually quite legendary. It's also straight up, like, immigrant child behavior where you're like, I'm not spending real money, even though I'm clearly scamming a lot of it and have a lot of it. But, like, so what do you think about Coach Shah? You think he was in on it?
Well, we talked about that today. And I was reminded that he did go to law school. So I think.
Yeah, you know, he used to be an ambulance chaser.
Yeah, he's gotta be in on it. He had to have known.
I think he's fucking fully in on it. I think he was like...
I think he had to have known.
I think he was. He plays the whole, like, I'm a Muslim, I believe in God, I pray, I'm, like, so fucking thing. And I was like, dog, you got strong scammer energy. I know another Muslim who's sort of scamming big time, yeah, but, like, come on. I'm not... Hey, look.
I was gonna say, there's an entire government in Iran that says they're devout Muslims and they're very honest. They also control the alcohol supply in Iran.
Like... I know. They're not fools. That's a very fascinating case. Also interesting, the same woman who defended Jen Shah is now defending Jonathan Majors, which I think is like such a huge red flag. Like automatically I'm like,
so she dropped Jen Shah as a client because Jen Shah didn't pay her.
Oh,
and so it was like over $100,000.
Well, I know, but here's the thing. It's like, hey, I don't know about you, but how could you have seen that coming?
We were talking about today, like, you're a terrible lawyer. I don't think you should be using her for the law.
Who could have known Jen Shah wouldn't have paid you?
Yeah.
Idiots.
Who would have thought? But we also did the Fugees this season. We did George Santos. We just have a series right now on Jim Trafficking, this Ohio congressman that's, like, incredible. We're doing Milli Vanilli later, Rod Blagojevich, and that's just this season. So,
hell yeah.
I mean, I really love this show. It's really fun. It allows me to, like, use the law degree, whatever. You know, I'm almost done paying it off. But actually
luck.
Being a lawyer. Yeah, we're close.
No, that's sick. I love that. Where can people find the podcast and find you?
At fraudsters.fm.
Yeah, fraudsters.fm. Fraudsters LPN on all the socials. And I'm at Sena Now, SEENANOW, on all the socials, Threads included. Look out. Teens. I'm coming for the Threads.
Did you say teens?
Teens.
Okay.
God. Put my foot in my mouth. I think I'm that one. No.
I can't stop looking at your baby. Oh, I'm fully on Cosmo's Instagram now. I'm so deep in.
This is great.
I mean, you guys also, like, the costume work is so strong. Also, the sweater work. He's wearing, like, a cowl neck sweater in a photo. I'm like, what? I can't. He's so cute. The one with his cousins and that little, like, Christmas sweater. Are you fucking kidding?
Oh, yeah.
I just saw the one of him, like, leaning down. Oh, my God. Okay, I gotta stop.
And I'll get your phone number, and I'll text you some more pictures.
I just, like, pass out halfway through the show. I just can't handle how cute he is. I think I'm baby crazy. Do you guys feel that way?
I'm not gonna jump into that one. I've learned over the years.
So cute.
And speaking of babies, I'm at my sister's, and I have to go babysit. So... thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. Love doing it.
You're awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. Do you want to wrap us out this time, Anna?
Sure. We are at Ethnically Ambiguous. Nope. We are at Ethnically Ambig on Instagram. We are at Ethnically Amb on Twitter. Follow us to, you know, follow us. I'm at Anna Hosnia on Twitter. I'm at Selling Hosnia on Instagram. Shireen?
I'm Shiro Hero on Instagram. ShiroHero666 on Twitter. And that is the show. Thanks again, Sena. You are sick.
Thank you. Thanks.
No, you're sick, girl.
As I said that, I'm like, okay. Maybe not today. I'm the one that's sick. Anyway,
okay.
That's the show. Goodbye.
Bye. Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.